This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. With the numbers of wounded warriors returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, we've become increasingly aware that not all the injuries they've suffered can be seen with the naked eye. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, plagues many. And here with some important new data on who is most at risk for this debilitating syndrome is Dr. Stephen Glatt, Associate Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and the Director of the Psychiatric Genetic Epidemiology and Neurobiology Laboratory, or PsychGene Lab, at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Glatt. Thanks for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
So you've just completed a study, I think it was just published in June of 2013, in the American Journal of Medical Genetics, I guess neuropsychiatric genetics, on this whole thing about who might be at risk for PTSD. Tell us about it.
Well, it's been an ongoing study for many years in which we've partnered with veterans to look retrospectively at blood samples that we've collected from them when they were in training. Basic training before they were deployed to active war zones at the time in Iraq and Afghanistan. And some of them, of course, came back with PTSD and some of them did not. So we wanted to find if there was anything that we could have measured pre-deployment before they went away that might have suggested that they were at an increased risk for PTSD.
What were your hypotheses? What led you to even look into all of this or think that there could be some way of figuring out who would be more at risk?
Well, we had two hypotheses. One of them was about looking in peripheral blood for biomarkers, first of all. We've generated a hypothesis over time that genes that are expressed in peripheral blood are also similar to the genes that are expressed in the brain. And so by measuring the blood when we can't measure the brain, it might give us a good proxy for what's going on in mental disorders. And we've proved that principle time and time again in other disorders, such as schizophrenia and autism. And then the other hypothesis that was specific to PTSD was regarding a specific set of genes that encode immune system proteins. Based on lots of previous data in veterans who have PTSD and others who have PTSD, it's found that those who have dysregulation of the genes, that means changes in the expression amounts of genes in the immune system, are more likely to develop PTSD.
So there really are things in the peripheral blood, meaning the blood that runs through your arms and legs, correct?
Yes.
That can highlight or draw attention to the fact that you, as an individual, might be more susceptible to PTSD.
That's correct.
And what did you actually find?
So we did confirm our hypothesis that a select set of immune system genes that we could measure at baseline among guys who are about to be deployed to war zones, those who had high levels of expression versus low levels of expression, that was a very good predictor of who would go on to have PTSD after they experienced similar levels of trauma.
How could you, the one thing that strikes me is how could you really assess the issue of similar levels of trauma? I mean, that seems like really hard thing to get your arms around.
It is, but this work is highly collaborative, and there's many people that we worked with in groups at the University of California, San Diego, and my MD-PhD student, Dan Tiley, here at Upstate Medical University, and really around the country to perform various assessments on these individuals. Pre-deployment, these soldiers in training were very well characterized, so we knew a lot about their history and could match those who ended up to be cases versus those who ended up to be controls on all the background factors, such as their age, their sex, their ancestry. And then when they came back, they also completed these questionnaires again that cataloged, have you ever been in direct fire? Have you witnessed people dying? Have you shot at people? And have you been shot at? And so on and so forth. So we have very good data, actually, from their self-reports on how much trauma they had been exposed to. And so then we could carefully compare those who did develop PTSD and those who did not, but had the same level of trauma exposure, which was quite high, as you'd imagine.
How many people did you study, actually?
In this study, we collected blood samples from hundreds of individuals, but we only sampled 25 who ended up with PTSD and 25 who did not. Basically, that's due to cost constraints. This research is very expensive, but we wanted to do a pilot study to prove that there's something here worth pursuing. So now we're trying to write additional grants and secure additional funding so we can go back and look at all those other hundreds of samples we've collected.
So I saw that you have almost a 70% prediction accuracy. Tell us, what does that mean?
That means that if we get a blood sample from a soldier in training and we profile these genes that we've identified, we can say with 70% certainty whether or not they are likely to develop PTSD. Now, that's not perfect. That's not enough for us to now give this test to the military and say, this is a test you should be giving. But it gives us a kind of benchmark that we can aim to surpass. And we're working on technological improvements to the method that can help us raise that to 80 or 90%.
Wow. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and I'm here with Dr. Stephen Glatt. He's a neurobiologist, and we're talking about his most recent study on veterans to determine who's most at risk to develop PTSD. So tell me now that you found this to a pretty high degree of significance, and hopefully you'll get it more accurate. What is the significance of these findings? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, I think there's a couple areas that this work impacts public health. One of them is just understanding the neurobiological basis, hopefully, for what causes PTSD. And we think immune system dysregulation is an important part of setting up an individual to experience PTSD. So helping us understand how immune compromise makes you susceptible to the disorder.
Help us understand a little bit more when you say immune system dysregulation. What does that exactly mean?
It means that when this certain panel of genes cataloged in the article, this combination of genes are in concert, all changed to the same degree in somebody compared to an average individual, they may have heightened response not just to immune challenges, but also to stress.
So in other words, their immune system will also hyperreact.
Exactly.
And they'll hyperreact to stress.
Exactly.
So these are genes that are more sensitive both to stress and to perhaps an assault to the immune system.
Exactly.
Oh, that's
correct.
Very interesting.
And the other avenue that I think has potentially the highest public health significance is if we can refine this test, if we can predict with a high degree of accuracy who's likely to have PTSD, we might be able to inform the military or other high-risk occupations such as police, firefighters, first responders into identifying or at least providing the information to individuals about their susceptibility. Individuals can still make choices about what experiences they want, but knowing what they're at risk for can help make informed choices.
So you're talking about also issues of prevention. I mean, it might be that if you already are informed that you might be more susceptible, you might not choose that profession, or you might, I don't know, lower your risk in some ways.
That's correct. So for military, I mean, generally you don't get to choose how you serve, but having that information on hand and still making the choice to serve in the military, there might be certain tasks that are more suitable for your risk profile than being on frontline infantry.
It also strikes me how interesting these days this whole notion of biomarkers is or are, in the sense that having that information can predict any number of things, our likelihood to develop cancer at some point, a certain type of cancer, our likelihood, you know, all kinds of issues. So the understanding the human genome and these kind of genetic markers is really kind of at the core of what's going forth with medical science these days.
That's absolutely correct. So we know that the risk for many, if not all, mental disorders has some part genes. It's no longer a conversation about nature versus nurture. We know it's some part nature and some part nurture. And now we're just trying to unravel how much of it is nature, how much nurture, and how they interact.
And what is the nature part? What exactly is the nature component?
Right, and which genes comprise that? That's what we're looking for now, is to pinpoint those specific genes. And I think the Human Genome Project has made all of this possible.
It's astounding. One thing that strikes me, though, when we talk about the Human Genome Project or the whole idea of biomarkers, is this notion of privacy, which always raises its ugly head, in terms of if you do analyze someone's genes and find that they may be a candidate for a particular type of problem, disorder, illness, in this case, PTSD, how do we protect that information, or should we be protecting that information so that the person isn't potentially discriminated against? Or, you know, if an insurance company were to get the information, they maybe not be granted a certain policy or certain coverage. What's your thinking about
this
that?
This is a really good point. And I think, as so often is the case, sometimes the bioethical implications of the research don't get considered until after the horse is out of the barn.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
And in this case, our research was founded on the principle of privacy. So none of the individuals in any of our research studies have access to their results, and nor do we use their personal identifiers. But moving forward in terms of genetic testing and biomarker testing, it's very clear that all of these tests should be voluntary. And it's not always clear how you can intervene just knowing your susceptibility, but knowledge is power. So people who want to seek out this kind of test, it should never be mandated onto anyone. But people who want that information, I think, will be empowered such that when some intervention does come along that can help someone with a susceptibility, they can be the first to act on that.
No, I'm in complete agreement with that whole concept. And I think if we do protect people's privacy, then this is only the most exciting, you know, new development that we can imagine. I mean, we couldn't have imagined something like this even 20 years ago. So it's wonderful. But when you talk about, for example, prevention or even treatment for something like PTSD, that information would have to be made available to the individual and perhaps even to the people working with them.
Right. And so I think that information is only going to be powerful to the degree that an individual wants and is agreeable to use that information to prevent their exposures. It's that we're talking about trying to predict PTSD. And if an individual had access to understanding what they're liable to experience, they can make lifestyle choices to avoid those traumatic exposures.
But going back to that whole notion of nature and nurture, and I don't want to run out of time, I guess the question is, even with those genetic markers in place, is it possible to take a person who you might know might be more susceptible and train them in such a way that you affect the gene expression and they are not as susceptible as they might have been without that training?
This is a wonderful question. I'm glad you asked, because this is the flip side of the coin that we're studying very actively right now, which is resilience. And what's different about those individuals who did have that high level of trauma and didn't get PTSD? It turns out that what's different about them, it's not that those individuals who got PTSD had some other process going on. It turns out that the guys who were resilient had all those same responses and more. So resilience itself is a biological process. So if we can figure out how to induce that biological process among susceptible individuals, then you have a grand idea.
That is very grand. That's very, very exciting. Well, I thank you so much for coming in. You've just begun this type of research. I hope it looks like you're going to be doing a lot more.
Very much.
Yeah. And is the money available to do it?
Unfortunately,
this point?
The grant that funded our research has expired, but we're actively pursuing this because we think it has such huge public health implications. And the time is right for this as these veterans are returning from their deployments. It's time to figure out, you know, for the next generation, who's at risk and how can we prevent it?
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Stephen Glad. He's associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry and the director of the Psychiatric Genetic Epidemiology and Neurobiology Laboratory, or PsychGene Lab, at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.